what's up? Turn the mic on early. Heard me sing. Lucky people. You're all so lucky. This is the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With me today, normally, I would say with me today is our lovely and talented Rachel Gibbs. Now, I get to say our lovely and talented licensed therapist, Rachel Gibbs.
That's right.
Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. Hi. How stoked are you?
Words can't even describe it, man.
Oh, it's you said this is 10 years in the making. So let's just quickly. So you go to undergrad, right?
And so then, go to undergrad, 4 years, psychology bachelor's, check.
Boom.
Then 2 years master's program, master's degree in clinical psychology, check. And then 4 years of gaining 3,000 hours and a shit ton of experience.
Boom. And now, so then my next question is, because this happened to, I have another friend. I seem to attract therapists and psychologists, the like. Yeah, let's do a Rorschach on that. but she's a psychologist, and she works at UCLA, and they had a shooting there recently. And so I called to make sure she was okay. And then the people at the radio station wanted her to come on the air. And I called her a therapist. And then she teased me and said, by the way, I'm a psychologist. What is the difference?
The difference is the degree. So a psychologist has a doctorate, whether it be a PhD or a PsyD, and a therapist has a master's degree. And so a PhD is super research-based, a PsyD is more clinical-based, and then a master's in clinical psychology is going to be kind of a combination of both.
Got it.
Yeah.
So, all right. So now I understand. So then are you, like, is this like when, you know how there are kids who they, you know, take AP classes and they go through high school and then they want to backpack across Europe for a year before they go on to Yale or Harvard. Is that like, are you going to do that? Or is the next step that you go for a PhD or an SID? Are you like, I'm done.
Actually, I've been working towards my PhD for a little bit. But I'm actually going to take a break and practice what I preach and have some balance and just focus on this accomplishment and, continue to build up Right Wellness, which is the Right Wellness Center is the company that, Kyle and I are starting, my fiance. And then come back, you know, maybe when there are some children in the mix and, do that later. There's no rush.
Yeah. I don't know how long it takes, but I do know that especially when she was pregnant with our first child, Jacob, I tried to tell my wife, and it's nowhere near as involved. I'm just now realizing as I'm starting the sentence, but it's like there's a very close comparison between getting your real estate license and becoming a doctor.
Oh, yes. Same thing. Mm-hmm.
Justin, you idiot. But I tried to tell her. I said, you know, get the class done. You want to get your real estate license, do it now because now's the time. And she goes, but I don't have time. I go, yeah, but you're going to have less time. I don't know. But I imagine when we add a third person who's a glorified flesh slug that needs us for everything, that you're going to have even less time. And she didn't listen to me. And like all things for my wife, she wishes she had listened to me. I think it's most people that I come across. That may be just my own, my own lenses on that. But anyway, congratulations.
You know, I try to have this angle of we all have as much time as we want. And it's just up to us how we choose it instead of kind of coming from this place of scarcity that we all tend to do, which is like, I have no time. I'm so busy. There's no time to do anything. Instead, it's this kind of narrative of like, I have all the time in the world. I get to choose how I spend it and I can figure it out.
That mad bit of knowledge was dropped to you by licensed therapist Rachel Gibbs, which also reminds me before we get too into any of this is that this show is for entertainment purposes only. And that if you have anything in this show that you hear, you should actually consult another licensed therapist or actually consult licensed therapist Rachel Gibbs. She can talk to you and help you out via Skype. You can reach out to her through you want everybody to go to Right Wellness now, or do you still want RachelGibbsTherapy.com?
Rachel Gibbs Therapy still. Right Wellness is under construction. Yeah. We're pre-launch.
This is very exciting, and I'm not going to let any kittens out of any bags, Creepy Justin.
Thank you.
But I will say that there's talks of a podcast at the very least that I think at least all of you will be very stoked to listen to that when it is launched.
Yeah, thanks to you.
So, yeah, so reach out to Rachel or a professional therapist if you have any questions about anything said on the show, because this, again, is only for entertainment purposes. Today, we are talking about, and this is something that I feel is very far away from me, but I know lots of the people listening have the teenage children and even
younger. You think that the sex talk's far away from you?
Oh, it's already starting. Look what I stepped
I've met your children, Justin.
Yeah.
It's not far away. It was like 2 days ago.
Oh, Jacob is so in love, and it is so hard and so adorable at the exact same time. He's seven. He's going to be eight in September, and there's a girl in his class that he's head over heels for, but there's this other boy that likes her, and I guess I just found out from one of the moms, lots of drama. It's like Pretty Little Liars around my house now. I found out from one of the other moms who had like a play date that this little girl also likes the boy that Jacob says likes her. And he is so, Rachel, he is so much like his father. You know, I don't know what the people listening, what your impression of me is, but I'm a sap. I will be the first to tell you that as much as I bitch and moan and complain, not only about my children, but also about my wife in particular, I am head over heels in love with that woman. And without her in my life on the daily, I would be insane.
She's super hot and super awesome.
She's
what's
great.
There not to love?
And ironically, super annoying. I don't understand. But I know it. I know it because it happened to me. I break down mentally if I do not have time with that woman. And I'm not even talking about sex. I'm sure that relieves a lot of tension too. But if I do not have that woman where I have a conversation with that poor, poor woman who has to listen to me, I become less happy. And I'm thankful. So my son, I see him being the same way. I was looking for Mrs. Worsham at about the first or second grade level. That is not a joke. I may not have been aware of what it would have taken to be Mrs. Worsham, but I knew that I was not playing around in the relationship game.
That's adorable.
It was. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that my parents got divorced. And I don't know why, but I became incredibly fascinated with relationships from the time I was in about first or second grade, which is when they split up and my dad met my stepmom and yada, yada, yada. So I bring all this up because I see him going through it. And there's a part of me that wants to protect him, but I know that I can't, because he's worried that if this girl gets in another class with this boy, that they're going to then run off and live with each other forever. And so he's hoping that he's in class with her so that he can maintain his relationship. And that's like verbatim my thoughts. And I want so badly. I did tell him. I said the thing about, because he was talking about how he wanted me to help him win her over from this other boy kind of thing. Like help him get his hat in the race, if you would.
Oh, my God.
I know. And I'm sitting here going, I'm long ways away from the sex talk. So I said to him, I said, you know, bud, I go, here's, you know what I'll tell you about being young and girls is that every girl you're with when you're young, you think is the girl you're going to be with for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And I said, and while I don't necessarily think that's a bad idea, I think you should have another thought in the back of your head that goes, if it doesn't work out, though, that's totally fine because there's going to be someone else, you know, kind of a thing.
Totally.
So that's what I'm wrestling with in my little elementary school level. And I know that I had the sex talk, quote unquote, with my dad when I was about five. So again, I don't know why I'm having the conversation. I'm saying the words out loud to live forever on the interwebs.
Yeah.
I'm long ways away from having the sex talk. I'm borderline delusional with my head to have up my
basically,
ass.
Basically, yeah. Mm-hmm.
My father divorced my mom and started dating my stepmom, and then he waited a little bit, and then he wanted me to meet her. And so, weirdly enough, I asked him, I remember sitting in the floorboard, because that was before you had to have a kid buckled into a Mooner Lander seat when he was in the car. So I'm sitting in the floorboard talking to my dad, as you did when you were in the 80s, and he said, well, I'm dating this other woman, and I like her, and I'd like for you to meet her. I think you'll like her, too. And I was like, okay. And he said, her name's Marianne, and I said, are you having sex? And I remember seeing my dad going, and then he goes, and then he kind of just, I think he had a moment of like, I'm just going to shoot straight with this kid, even though he's five. And I appreciate my dad because he goes, yeah.
I met your dad.
Oh, they're the best. And so I go, oh, and then I kind of said, well, what's sex? And without going into detail, what he kind of broke it down to me, he said, well, when two people are older, he goes, I think it's really important that they're adults. And he goes, and I also think it's important that they care for each other a lot. That's something that they do as a way of showing affection for each other. Because he didn't want me to grow up to be uptight about sex. And I don't think I don't. Here's the thing that's weird. I also saw a porno when I was like a couple years after that because he was playing a joke on my older stepsister. But it kind of blew up in his face and I was the only one watching it.
Oh, no.
Well, it wasn't a bad thing because, again, he didn't freak out. And I'm hoping this will be kind of the tone of what you have prepared to tell us today is that.
Yeah.
I saw it and I was like, and my dad's like, oh, crap. And he kind of goes, well, what you watching? And I said, oh, I said, well, it's I don't know. It's some movie where I think this guy is obviously a king because it was like, I remember like four chicks were like servicing him at the same time. Only one, though, was on the business end, I remember. And I don't see, it was some kind of weird 70s porn because I think if I remember correctly, the girls had like peacock-esque plumage on their heads. But they were still in like a shag carpeted 70s van. I remember him having the old school like 70s handlebar mustache and hair everywhere before we became aliens and no one had hair in our adult entertainment. But
right.
So he kind of, and I said, I don't, and I never thought twice about it. And then there were a couple times that I had the stereotypical where dad left the DVD or the, well, this was VHS back then, into the VHS player when I went to go put in a movie I was going to watch. And I would just hit play thinking my movie was in there. And I would just see a gigantic close up of a penis entering a vagina. And here's the thing. I think because of the way my dad always handled it, I would just look at that and go, oh, geez. And I would turn it off and then put my, you know, DuckTales in or whatever it was.
You know,
was going
on. It's like it's the same thing when kids fall down. You know, like if they get an owie and their parents freak out and then the kid starts freaking out because they're just reacting to how you're reacting. They're looking to see how to handle the situation from you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you stay calm, usually they can stay calm. And then, you know, it's like, you know, kind of a bigger deal if they're not.
If they're not talking about it.
Well, no. Like, sorry, if they're not, if they're still freaking out about the boo-boo, you know, and the parents like super calm, then, you know, it's probably something worse.
So let's get into it then. How old? I've heard from other people and on the line online that 5-6 is usually the age that they start to have questions. That's also when you get a lot of, for boys, at least a lot of penis jokes coming around. Is that usually when they become curious about that?
Yeah, I would say probably like 4 to 6, but it also depends on if there's a little sibling involved. Because if a kid experiences having a little brother or sister come into the world, then they're handling some things that maybe someone who's an only child or someone who's older when their little sibling gets brought into the world would handle, right?
Yeah.
Because like they see their mom's belly growing, and so they're going to have questions about that. You know, then they start to ask how they got there, and usually the questions at that age are more about what is that? Why is it different than mine? And like, how did I get here? They're not so much like, oh, why do you, you know, give daddy blowjobs? You know, they're definitely more, more biological type questions. Like, why is that different looking from mine? Or, you know, why do I have this looking thing and my brother or sister has this looking thing?
I especially bet if a sibling has different genitals, then there are more questions that will arise because of that. So am I right then? I think all of our assumptions would be that, because here's the thing. I think most people listening, if your kid comes into and says, and they're 4 or 5 and they said, where did I come from? That you would want to err, not be uptight about it, but you would want to err on the side that less is more. Is that, but if they keep prying, then you're like, all right, here comes all the info. Is that a fair way to approach it?
Yes and no. It also depends on the maturity of the 4-year-old.
Hmm.
You know, if you look back, I'll have to send a clip and we can play it. But if you look at videos of me when I was 4, it's really creepy. I talk like I'm 10. Like it's really bizarre. Very, very, very well spoken and very like understanding of what's going on. And then you look at other 4-year-olds or any normal 4-year-old that wasn't me. And, you know, they're kind of not like that, you know, and maybe your kid's like that or not. But at 4, it's kind of like you know, mom has a uterus in there, and then you grow in there, and then when you're ready to be born, we push you out through the vagina.
Right.
You know, it's making sure that you're using, like, the correct terms and not saying things like, you grew in mommy's belly.
So you think it's better to use those specifics than to
Absolutely.
Not. Okay.
Because how confusing is it that when you eat chicken, it goes to the same place as where you grew?
Interesting. Because here's my thing, and I do a lot of this with my kids, where because the first thing that comes to my mind that we most have to kind of deal with, I think now, more so than what our parents did, is that other parents and other kids. Right. In my case, I'm a lot less protective and sheltering of my kids with information than I think most of the people around them at school. So there's a lot of things of like, listen, this stuff is totally fine for us to talk about in our house, but other people, they don't really like to talk about that stuff. So if you're here and you have questions about where you came from or sex or drugs, any of that stuff, anything goes. Come hit mom or dad, hit us up. We'll talk about it. But what we talk about between us isn't something that you can then go share between your friends. And I think that kind of creates a buffer to protect the kids who aren't necessarily ready. And also the parents who aren't ready to broach those subjects with their kids. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And you're teaching your kid boundaries.
Ah, yes, Rachel Gibbs. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, look at that. You're already teaching them that, you know, everybody's different. And just because you're ready to talk about this doesn't mean that Joe and Sally at preschool are ready to talk about it, even though most likely they'll probably go talk about it anyway. Right.
So let's get into a little bit of the younger kid. We're sitting down. Kid comes in, has questions where I come from. We've gone over they, you know, oh, well, you know, you grew in mom's uterus and then you came out mom's vagina. Mm-hmm. And then if that satiates them and they're like, oh, OK, then we let that go. Or is it a thing where we should go? And then what happens is when a man and a woman love each other, they come together in a very special kiss.
Specifically a special kiss. Do you know that I had so many friends tell me that growing up, they literally thought that sex was kissing?
I thought it was up the butt forever.
That's from all that porn you were watching.
Well, ironically, I was watching a gigantic close-up of a penis entering a vagina, but didn't make that connection. I just figured, because I didn't know what a vagina was, so I just thought, well, there's only one orifice, I guess. I'm like, that's where you put it. Probably until I was almost a teenager, honestly. Swear to God. I thought,
seriously?
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's one of the things I liked about my childhood is that my family was super open about sex and anything went. And what that kind of created was a weird kind of reverse sheltering where because nothing was taboo, I didn't really have curiosity. So I remember in sixth grade when they did the splitting up of the girls and the boys, and then they tell the girls what happened to them and the boys what happened to them. One of my favorite things that didn't become funny until I was older was they were telling us in sixth grade how the pullout method doesn't really work, that you can still get a girl pregnant. And,
oh my God, this you know, is hysterical.
And I said to the guy, and he goes, so it's not going to work. And then I remember going, thinking I was like having camaraderie with boys in a locker room, like which very rarely happens to my chick-oriented brain. But anyway, I said to him, I go, right, it's like, how would you know when that happens? And I have a vivid memory of my sixth grade teacher looking at me and going, oh, you'll know. Trust me, you'll know. Me just being confused at 12 going, oh, I still didn't understand what he meant. But it was like, you know, in the Pixar movies when they slip in a joke for the adults.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what it was, but it was happening live. So
that's
I spent
amazing
most of my childhood thinking that you had sex in the butt. Wasn't really enticed by the butt. Wasn't really interested in it sexually in any way. I've always been way more interested in the connection within a relationship than I have really been the kissing or any of that stuff when I was a
and
kid.
And so that's super interesting. So just to rewind super quickly.
Yeah, please.
If a kid comes to you at 4, 5, 6, they're not, well, 6 maybe. So let's say 4, 5. If a kid's coming to you at 4 or 5, they're not quite developed yet to really understand the relationship aspect.
Mm.
So I would say as like a general, and again, all kids are different and you know your kids best. So like if your kid is some, you know, crazy science or super smart, like ahead of the game type thing, that might be different. But as a general rule of thumb, I would say under 5, stick with just like the super biological terms. But okay. That's also, you have to build the foundation. So if the kid's two, right, and they start talking and they're pointing to their crotch area, it's using words like penis and vagina mm-hmm. at two that sets up that foundation. Because if you start at two saying, you know, oh, pee-pee and tutu and all these, you know, other words that kind of get tossed around, then when they're five, it's really hard to explain, oh, well, your tutu has the baby. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't connect.
Yeah.
And so then there's this huge disconnect. So the earlier that you start with the terms. Appropriate language, the better. And then I would say about 6 years old is like when the relationship can kind of start coming into it. So like, you know, things like looking at it like a puzzle, you know, like two pieces that are supposed to go together. Yeah. Like the vagina is made so that the penis can go inside and then, you know, the sperm come out and they're like little tadpoles and kind of like they do at the beginning of, what's that movie? Look Who's Talking with John Travolta yes. and Kirstie Alley.
And we see them all,
Yeah, and they're like swimming. They're like, yeah. I'm going to beat you.
That's how I'm going to have the sex talk with my kid. I'm just going to show them the opening credits.
I mean, that sounds great to me.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. What's my gut is telling me that unless my kid is really prying at their age, like, and we're not super uptight about anything, I don't think. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm having a bad self-assessment here. But I feel like to go into, you put a penis into a vagina, maybe too much. Am I more reacting to what I think my kids are able to handle developmentally? And is it a fair assessment for me to go, if the kid keeps having questions, it's better to satisfy those curiosities with actual answers right. than it is to coyly go, we'll talk about this later.
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. And you know your kid best.
Right.
You know, if your kid is three and comes up to you and goes, what's intercourse? Most likely they're just repeating a word that they heard somewhere and they're not actually curious.
Because, and this actually came up in the chat room, I think you saw it too, is that somebody was saying that they told their eight-year-old that a little bit of DNA from mom and a little bit of DNA from dad come together, and that's how it's made them. And that was how they kind of handled the conversation. And the kid, I guess, seemed to be happy with that. We've told them that same exact thing to both of our kids. We've said that you guys, because they asked, but they asked, how come I look like you, or people mm-hmm. say I look like you, and then the other one says and I look like mom,
right.
And I said, well, you guys are kind of made, and we told him, we said the exact same thing that this guy's saying, is that we said, you know, there's little tiny pieces of us called DNA, and what happens is they take half of our DNA and half of your mom's DNA, or half of my DNA, I mean, and then they put it together, and that kind of jumbles up and it makes a new person, and that makes you. And they, if now honestly, if they said, well, where does that DNA come from, then I would have said, well, it comes from sperm.
Right.
And then
so
mom
here's
has
the
an
thing,
egg.
Though, is someone under 8 years old is generally not going to have that next question of, well, where does DNA come from? Their brains just don't work like that yet.
Ah.
But at eight, the thing with eight, and this is actually what I wanted to hit on with what this gentleman said in the chat, is that at 8 years old, kids are actually starting to take in a lot from their outside life and the media as well. And so by eight, which is like third grade, there's a lot of information that's going to be swirling around their brain about relationships, sex, and then also like the negative side of sex. So rape, sexual abuse, anything along those lines, that can kind of start coming up in their awareness around
really?
Third grade.
Why is that?
It sucks. It's just the way that the brain develops. And that's kind of like what developmental psychologists have been able to kind of distinct as like the age that starts happening. And again, it's totally different for different kids. Not everybody fits this kind of mold. But, you know, some girls are getting their periods at nine.
Wow. You know
and
what?
And so, the hormones start flowing. They're already, they might be starting to like have crushes, not maybe like Jacob is, but more even like, oh, I want to kiss that person. You know, I want to like go to the little after school dance with them.
Because I think what Jacob is going through is that he finds her cute and maybe likes to hang around her. And I think that he also is maybe making the assumption that because she's a girl, that's why he wants her to be his girlfriend. Do you think that's a fair? But he's not. he's not really seeing her in a sexual way or anything like that.
He has building blocks and he's making the bridge himself right now. So he's saying, oh, that girl's pretty. You know, I like spending time with her. I like playing with her.
And it really is based on the fact that she's a girl.
Yes.
That he wants to label her as a girlfriend as opposed to just being one of the dudes he also likes to hang around with.
Exactly.
All right, cool. I want to talk, let's take a quick, what may or may not be a commercial break, depending on where you're listening. This is what I've learned about Blog Talk Radio. And then when we come back, I want to talk more about this age rage and awareness of sexual abuse and rape, because that is wildly interesting to me. So we will be right back, or maybe immediately right back. All right, like I said, you either heard a commercial or you didn't, and that's how that goes here, and I will figure out a way to better make these transitions than making them horrible ear sores, or maybe they make you giggle. Either way, I don't know. But you really blew my mind with the idea of, but at the same time, it kind of makes sense, is that because they're more media aware and they might pick up a little subtle thing, or maybe they're walking by when mom and dad are watching a show that's meant for them, and then they're aware that people can be hurt. It's also, I think, a thing that maybe coming up in school, like I remember getting talks from, we had DARE when I was a kid.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, so you had the cop who came, and he had this poor son of a bitch who had a C grade level in high school. And just wanted to tote a gun and save some lives. Now is to talk to elementary school kids about pedophiles and home abuse and drugs and everything in like a 3-month course once a week. And he said that, you know, people aren't supposed to touch you unless you're okay with it, and how to handle all of that stuff. Is there anything while we're on this, and I don't know if I'm sending us down a rabbit hole that wasn't intended for this show, but there's a part of me, I would be lying if there was a part of me that kind of didn't especially look at my older son, because he wants to make people happy. And there was a part of me that was like, man, I hope he never has somebody who tries to take advantage of that when I'm not around. Is there anything that if I'm a parent who's a little bit worried that my kid might be susceptible, that you could say to us, to either say, here's where you might be afraid where you don't need to be, and here are some things that you can look for in the area of abuse?
In the sense of looking to see if your kid has been abused?
Yes. Or,
okay. So that's definitely a huge rabbit hole.
Okay.
But can we touch on it lightly and then kind of come back?
Yes.
Okay. So the biggest indicator you can look for is any significant change in their normal behavior. Like, that's the most general point blank thing that I can give you.
Okay.
So if your kid is normally like outgoing and playing, and all of a sudden you notice that he or she's being super reserved, or if it's the opposite, if you know your kid's usually kind of more introverted and playing by themselves, and now all of a sudden they're like grabbing on people and touching people, anything that feels very not like what your kid has been doing is generally a good indicator that something is going on.
And am I unfairly imagining that if it is the opposite, where you have a more introverted kid and they go extra, it's probably not going to be filled with super happy faces and cuddle time. It's going to be filled with acting out, kind of like grabbing and or separation anxiety type of grabbing on a different level than just, hey, we're new to preschool and that's the age. Yes, yes?
Yes. And it would be more it would be more to the point where you would say, like, this is odd. Like, my child doesn't normally run up to people and hug their leg. And now all of a sudden he's running up to his new preschool teacher and, grabbing onto her thigh and won't let go. And he just met her.
Hmm. Man, that I feel like that would be rough. Like, that would be a rough thing to figure out. But anyway, we'll put a pin in that. I'm sorry I took us down there.
No. And if anybody has, like, specific questions on that, reach out to me. Reach out to, like, your primary care doctor. That's something that could be easily assessed. So don't let your worries go in a spiral. Get it assessed by a professional if you're concerned, and then get the worry out of your head.
Okay. So let's say we're still in. I want to kind of take us through chronologically, and then the next kind of chunk that we do, we'll focus heavily on the teenagers. But we're still seem to be in that, like, I want to say, 7 to 10, preteen kind of kid era. Let's say we have a kid who's curious about, sex, and they've seen it on TV, or they maybe have heard mom and dad joking about it, and they have lots of questions. What's a good way to broach that?
So usually I would say as a rule of thumb, like kind of how your dad, I mean, maybe not to like the extreme of the, you know, the porn and the, not that we have VCRs anymore. Look at me, I'm dating myself. I'm like, if there's a video in your VCR, you know, it's so easy for kids to find porn now. Like if they type in Pornhub instead of YouTube, you know, it's yeah. like, oops. So it's so important to just be open about it, like you're doing with your kids, Justin. You know, bringing it up at the beginning is going to be super uncomfortable, but it gets easier and easier. And then if you think about it, you know, we talked about last time we talked, I mentioned if you can't talk about it with the person you're going to do it with, then you're not ready to do it. Mm. It's a very similar thing. You know, you're letting your kids know that this is not a subject that needs to be taboo. You want them to grow up into an adult that has a healthy sex life. You want that for your kid. And so by protecting them and by making the conversation wait until they're older, you're not doing them any favors. You're making that transition into a sexually active adult much more difficult, in all honesty, because they're going to have more confusion of, oh, but I'm not supposed to be the sexual being. And the reality is that you are, you know, when you hit a certain age, like our kids are going to grow up into sexual beings. And whether or not we say out loud that we want that, because it's weird when they're four, right. We do want that for them.
Yeah, I've been wrestling with that a lot recently because there are things like in regards to violence that I'm okay with them partaking because I can tell them that it's just a fake thing in a movie. But then there are aspects, you know, in regarding sex that I seem to be kind of a little bit more protective. And I've always tried to figure that out. And my rationale for it has been like, well, the chances of them becoming armed and going to take on an elite force in a foreign nation are slim to none. But the odds of them having intercourse with somebody of the same or opposite sex in their life is almost 100% going to happen.
Right.
And it's a curious thing for me that I'm trying to navigate as a parent because I want them to enjoy their sexual life. But I don't know if it's an American thing or if it's just a time thing that doesn't seem to be a part of the parenting puzzle.
No.
It doesn't seem to be a part where it's my job to guide him through his sexual life. And also, I don't think you're going to disagree with me. I don't think it's necessarily my job to guide them. I think
no.
It's my job to inform them, but there also needs to be a boundary.
Right.
To a certain extent. And this is coming from a guy who literally told his parents that I lost my virginity the day after I did it. And every other person I've talked to said that is wildly weird. I could never do that. But they also said, man, I wish I could have kind of done that with my parents.
Yeah. So I don't think that's weird.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I did the same thing.
Oh, good, 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 good.
Yeah. I had a family, I mean, and you know, you look at how I became a therapist and a sex therapist and, you know, maybe this is part of why, but I'm very thankful for them is, you know, my parents put me into like a private sex ed when I was 9 and it was like a mommy and me class. And so there were like 6 other girls with their moms and it was all about puberty, sex, birth, and also they hit on sex for pleasure when you're older. And so
You were how old again when this happened?
9.
Okay.
9. And again, I was a little bit more mature than other kids. So I would say probably the majority of the girls were like 11, 10 or 11. But I was very lucky I went because I developed much earlier. If you look at pictures of me, in fact, I'll post one in the Facebook group. If you look at pictures of me when I'm 14, I look the same.
As you do now?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you can see that, like, you know, I've aged a little bit, but not much. I'll post it. You'll get a chuckle out of it.
Okay.
But they address these questions. And I vividly remember being in the car on the way home from the last class. And I was with my friend. We did it together, like the two moms and the two daughters. And I said, Mom, you know, I kind of understand why sex would feel good for a girl. Like I could conceptualize why this sensation would feel good for a woman. And I said, I really don't understand why it feels so good for the guy. They're just sticking something in there.
That is so crazy.
And like my little brain could not understand why. Like I was like imagining like a, I don't know, like a highlighter going into a hole. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
why
yeah.
would the highlighter, enjoy that.
That's so funny because while you're saying that, I'm a 37-year-old man going, I'm not sure I understand how it could feel good for a woman.
Right?
I'm 37.
Right? And here I was at 9. Like, I don't understand this.
I'm 37 with a wife. Oh, she's a lucky lady. Anyway, you were saying.
So even at that age, I had watched this birth go on in this sex ed class. I had watched, you know, they told me everything. And this main question was like, how is this pleasurable for the guy?
Yeah.
It just did not make any sense. And so your kid's going to have questions no matter what stage they're at. And overall, like if you're going to take away one thing from this, it's that be developmentally conscious about where your kid is at, but be honest. And the more biological and physiological you can be up until they're like 9, 8, 9, 10, then you can get into the more emotional aspects of it.
And when you say, because here's the, when you say be honest, I think it's important to add to that and tell me if you think I'm wrong, that you can even be honest to a point where you could say, in my opinion, I kind of think you're too young to be kind of dealing with this stuff. I understand, you could say, I understand the curiosity and I will give you the information, but I also think it needs to be said that this is not something you should be doing at this age. Is that a fair thing or does that make it taboo?
Absolutely.
Because it's
Absolutely.
Also establishing a boundary and 100%. An expectation. Yeah.
And you still need to teach your kid that even though the penis goes inside the vagina, that doesn't mean that you do that in third grade.
Right. Because that's, I think, everybody's fear. It was kind of my fear when I'm hearing going, oh, my God, you're 9 years old. And we all think, well, now you're immediately going to want sex. And we all sound like those nuns who don't want condoms given out at high school.
Right. Right. But the thing is that you don't want sex at 9.
No.
No kid wants sex at 9.
Right.
They just don't. So no matter what you tell your kid, they're not going to run out. They might have questions and want to see each other naked, but that happens in kindergarten.
And wouldn't you say that the more, I guess, withholding you are of satiating that curiosity, the more likely they are to actually experiment if given an opportunity?
Yep. When,
you know what I mean? Like it's going to push them. But if you, it's, I learned this and I never thought to apply it to this same subject when I was a rec leader for the city of San Jose, when I was going to college, that one of the things they told us about child development in this video that just blew my mind. And it's so true is that they said, if you have a child who is curious about something, the best way, especially if it's an annoying curiosity, the best way is to satiate that curiosity. So if you have a kid who wants to splash in water, just constantly, anytime you can, let that kid splash in water. Because as soon as their brain has absorbed all the experiences with splashing water, it will satiate it and they will no longer have the desire to splash in water. So to me, how that would apply to this is that if you answer all of the questions that are hit and then end whatever conversation with, if anything else pops in your head, come hit mom or dad up. That's what we're here for, kind of a thing. Then that kind of squelches it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And especially with the internet today being so accessible to everyone from such a young age, they're going to find the answer if they want it. And so the question is, do you want it to come from you? And do you want to have that relationship with your child? Or do you want it to come from somebody else? And if it comes from someone else more than it comes from you, they're not going to come to you. When it's going on, they're just not.
If I have a kid who's in this, you know, again, 8 to, I feel like maybe closer to 12, it's a little bit more understandable. But say I find out that some kid in that age range is looking at porn.
In which age range?
8 to 12. I'm trying to stick to where we are right now.
Yeah.
To me, personally, that seems like a young time to not
That's
necessarily
really
be curious. You know, like if you, I could get that if you stumbled upon it or something like that, I get the curiosity part, but I kind of feel like that's not a time to be watching that because there's an element to pornography that I think is not, obviously it's fantasy and it's not realistic.
Right.
And I would hate for that to be a first impression of sexual interaction for either of my sons. It's important to me. I'm hitting you with a lot, Rachel, on this question, but it's important to me personally for my sons that I want them to understand that there is an aspect of being a gentleman sexually as well, because I want them to understand that sex for women is a very different thing. And I think that there's an element of responsibility that you have. And what comes with that, I don't want them to feel like they have to reserve themselves, but what comes with that is that when you find yourself in what is to you a very trusting relationship and you have things that you want to experiment with or whatever, that's a time that you can do that with this partner that you trust and who trusts you.
Right.
But that,
so
go ahead. Oh, yes.
No, finish.
Well, I just, because there's a part of me that doesn't want them to think that, like, here's the thing. I get that they may be curious, say about anal, right? Uh-huh. But there's a part of me that's like, I really think, and I don't know if I'm being prudish on this, I really think that's not a thing you should be doing until you're at least 21. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, now, yeah. If one of them, I don't know. And now here's the thing. I would be a colossal hypocrite because I think if one of them grows up and they say, "Dad, I'm into dudes," then obviously I would not have that problem. That's kind of like the way it would go, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And I also think that it's a very different thing for a guy. But I just feel like if you're trying to request or ask a 16, 17 or whatever year old girl into doing something like that, that you're asking something that I think her brain can't really hang with. And this is where I think you kind of came up with your idea of if you're not comfortable talking to him about how you want this, then it's not something that should be even on the table. But
so let's rewind for a sec.
Yeah.
Because we just jumped from an 8-year-old looking up porn on the computer to a 16-year-old having anal.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. This is exact. You're displaying where every single parent's mind goes.
Yeah.
That jump that you just made.
Right. Well, that's what we're all. Yes, we're all afraid that if we expose the kid too early, that they're just going to become this sexual deviant, and that it's a runaway train that we want to nurture and not really control in a creepy way, but we want to help and not be uptight. There's so many things coming at you.
Right. So let's go back all the way to that 8-year-old kid looking at porn.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to tell a story that will embarrass the shit out of my brother if he listens to this. So my brother was 7 years old and the internet was like just a thing that was like not dial up, you know, like you didn't have to just like become, make the like,
beep, beep, yeah, it was sounds. Just becoming like DSL broadband.
Yes, exactly. So he's like 7 at this point. And so he could get on the internet without having like the house know that he was logging onto the internet. And so we're at my grandma's house and we were watching a movie and it was The Sixth Sense, actually. We were watching The Sixth Sense and it was too scary for him. So he's like, I'm going to go on the computer, and goes behind. And that little 7-year-old, my little brother, went on www.boobs.com.
I think you have told me this story. This is great.
Yeah. And my dad, when we found out, so I went on the computer afterwards and I think that I saw it up and like I told my parents, not to get him in trouble, like just to let them know what was going on.
I think that it sounds like that was the family dynamic that you guys had, that everybody was pretty open and communicative about these things.
Extremely, extremely. And I just remember my parents coming in to talk to him and my dad could not stop fucking laughing. Yeah. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have cursed. But
you could curse on this show. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
It's so funny. And the biggest thing, if you catch your kid doing this, is to get across that you are not judging them.
Mm.
That it is 100% that the curiosity is not the problem. That the interest is totally natural, but that website and that kind of stuff is not okay. It's not appropriate for kids.
Yeah, it's not meant for, and that's what I would feel like I would say to either one of my sons. I'd say, listen, I understand you're curious about sex and we can talk about it.
Yeah.
But I would want to explain to them that even if you're curious and you want to see this, because when you get older, I just want to make it clear to them that what you're seeing on the internet is not a real representation of what sex is or should be.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so depending on the age that you see them on the site, you know, whatever age it is would kind of dictate your response. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing is saying no, but without judgment of what they just did.
So even if it's closer to the 12 or preteen age than it is to the 8 or 9 range, is it still the same reaction? Or is that what you mean by depending on the age? Like, is it kind of
I feel like the curiosity and actually being able to seek it out at 12 is much more understandable and realistic.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So maybe a 12-year-old, you know, if you wanted to buy your 12-year-old like a Playboy and, you know, show them what, you know, without them having the risk of like watching porn, maybe that's the appropriate next step.
Does that create a weird boundary if my son and I are sitting down and I'm showing him a naked 22-year-old?
Well, I wouldn't like read it with him.
Right.
You don't need to like American Pie it. You know what scene I'm talking about.
Yes, exactly.
He's like shaved.
But here's, I see what you're saying is that if I'm bringing it to him and going old school with the paper form, I'm providing a filter, and right. that is parenting as opposed to the endless bounty of video and any kind of interest or curiosity that exists on the internet. Say, listen, right. if all you want to see is a naked lady boobs and to kind of figure out what you're into and all that, here you go, dude. Take a look.
Exactly.
And if you have any questions, come hit dad up. But yep. here it is. And I think the hardest part I'm hearing and kind of thinking of from talking to you is that the hardest part of being a parent is to try to let go of the uncomfortableness on your end. That the more yes. you can kind of stay chill and cool about it and not overthink it yourself, the more likely it is that you're actually going to have a kid who's not only going to appreciate it as they get older, but a kid who's going to feel more comfortable to come to you with questions and concerns.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And the kid, just like in our first little example about if they fall down and hurt themselves, the kid is looking to you to see how to react to this. They don't come into the world with preconceived notions about sex. They learn that from their friends,
like everything.
And from you.
Yeah.
So the more comfortable you are, the more comfortable they can be.
Go ahead.
You know, but at 12, you also want to be careful because then you're getting into the puberty age. And so that's depending on the kid could be, I would say maybe like 13, 14 could be when you have that conversation like you were talking about. You know, sex feel is really different in high school for boys and girls. Maybe not after everybody's 24, but, you know, from 14 to 24 – everybody's at really different ages.
Yeah. I think our next kind of jumped in, because I think that'll also get to what I took us down another rabbit hole of talking about, you know, anal and when your kid's 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
But before I want to take a break and then go to that. But before we do that, because another question that I think is awesome came in
yes.
from the chat room is that, let's say you're a single mom. And your son is interested in his penis, or vice versa. You're a single dad and your daughter is interested in her own vagina. My wife is wrestling with this a lot because she is in a house full of men mm-hmm. and she is constantly telling, especially our younger son right now, who's 5, get your hands out of your pants. He likes to run around in his underwear and he's constantly putting his hands in his underwear, and he's not diddling himself. But he's got his hand down there. And for the dudes that are listening, it's like, yeah, that's what you do. Like, you scratch or whatever. We don't really think about it, but I think women are much more sensitive to it, because she's even told it to me and I'm 37. Like, she goes, what the fuck are you doing over there? And I go, I got an itch. You don't get an itch? She goes, I got an itch, but you don't see me. And then she does her gorilla monkey face while she scratches at her crotch. My approach to my boys, even when they were really, really, because everybody remembers when they're a baby. And I think if I remember, it happens around 6 to 8 months, maybe in the 4 month range, is when they kind of discover it and they strum it like a guitar.
Yeah.
Whenever you change the diaper. And I would always, always let them finish, unless I obviously had something to do. But if it's just us hanging out at the house, I would just sit there until they lost curiosity.
Yep.
With it. And then I would put their diaper on. And my wife made fun of me. She's like, why do you do that? I said, I think it's because I'm a guy. I think it's because, like, I'm like, listen, if that's what you want to do, it sucks that you're a kid and you're kind of living like an invalid as an adult. You know what I mean? But if you're, and I also thought the more I let him do that, the less curious I think he may or may not be, or again, satiate the curiosity. And maybe it feels good. I don't know what it feels like to strum my penis like a guitar and have it feel good. But I'm imagining if that's my first experience with my penis, maybe it's delightful. So if he wants to blow off some steam while I'm sitting there changing his diaper, no nuts. Nobody gets hurt. So how say you to that?
Are we talking about hand down the pants for dudes, or yes, are we talking about masturbation?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that at this age, and to be fair to this mom, I think that we're not talking about masturbation. We're talking about just hands down the pants.
Yeah. So you can say something along the lines of, you know, I know that touching your penis feels really great and comforting, whatever word you want to use, you know, feels good, comfortable, whatever, but that's something that can, it needs to be done in private.
That's what she says. She says, if you want to touch it, you do that in your room.
Right.
And I agree with that. I do say that. I go, you know, when you're out here with us, I think that what, because here's the thing. I don't think he's doing it. We haven't gotten any complaints from the school. I don't think he's doing it there, but I think there's a level of comfort that he has with mom and dad when we're just sitting watching some Netflix shows together.
Right.
And that's, and he's not really thinking. And what she's kind of saying is, I want a boundary there.
Yes.
I don't, I'm not saying you shouldn't do it. Okay, good. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, as kids start to get to the point where they're going to be masturbating, which, by the way, is a lot younger than most people think.
How old?
It's very normal for like 4-year olds to be masturbating. They don't know what they're doing.
So you're saying like they kind of maybe are doing touching or something and it feels good, but obviously not to a completion because
physiologically possible. Like girls, you'll see some younger girls will like hold themselves up with their arms against like cabinets or like a bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like rub themselves, and you'll see like the muscles in their upper arms are like really toned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from like holding themselves up and like rubbing.
Yeah, our biology teacher in high school told a story about how his 4-year-old daughter, he would see her like grab one end of her blanket with her feet together and then grab the other with her hand and kind of like stretch it so she could apply pressure. And then he would see her kind of like rock her hips around, and he was like, and it, I remember thinking it was very interesting that all of the other kids became incredibly uncomfortable in that class and were like, what? And he's like, it's normal. Like, listen, it feels good to all of us, you know, kind of a thing. And I think, like, the mom just brought up is that, you know, he likes to put his blanket down there, and so she doesn't want him to grow up with like a blanket fetish, which I think is a natural thing for a parent to think and feel, but I don't think that that happens.
No. So, and this is kind of what we talked about earlier too, is that as parents, it's so easy to jump from A to Z. You know, we see our kid doing one thing, whether it's sexual or not, you know, they talk back and you're like, oh no, oh, my kid's just going to defy authority.
Yep.
And then, you know, they're going to be the ones that end up in jail. And, you know, it's like we jump so quickly, and it's, as long as the boundaries are set and the child is given the appropriate information for the age. And again, if you have questions about your specific kid, reach out to me. I'm happy to talk with you. Even if it's just for, you know, 1 hour, we can talk about it. Or talk to your primary care doctor.
Yeah. I think, well, because like my experience with this, and this is to help the moms out there, especially if you're the single moms coming from a dad's angle, a guy who has two boys, my kids are recently going through a phase, and I kind of inadvertently said this on the AM radio station I work at, forgetting that it wasn't a podcast, where I basically said I was looking forward to going swimming with my kids because they like going skinny dipping. And I think it's hilarious that they get in the water and they always go, it feels good on my penis. but it is. They like taking their swimsuit off and swimming in the water. And I've kind of decided I'm not going to be weird about it. I'm just going to be like, okay. But I did also tell them if there are other people, they can't do that. Like if they have friends over, they can't take their bathing suit off and then talk their friends into take, because you got to set a line. And they know that if Vava and Grandpa are here, that's okay, because Vava and Grandpa also are okay with it. But when Grandma Cheryl's there or when Grammy and Grampy are here, that's not okay, because I don't think they're going to be as comfortable with it. And
exactly.
They're like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah. And really, that's how life is, right? You're going to have friends who are okay with PDA. You're going to have friends who are not okay with PDA. You'll have friends who you can change in front of and get naked. You have friends who, you know, you'll always be behind a closed door. That's how life is. And so you're teaching them, you're modeling for them and teaching them the boundaries that come with anything having to do with sexuality, nudity, anything.
Yeah.
It's not always just about, you know.
So to get back to the question, too, is that how does a mom, if you're a single mom, broach the subject of a boy touching his penis when they can't really relate? I know my wife wrestles with that a lot.
Yeah. So this comes up a lot in my work specifically because I work a lot in the LGBT community. And so I have a lot of parents who are same sex. And so it'll be a lesbian couple who has a son, or it'll be a gay couple who has a daughter. And this question comes up all the time because they feel like hypocrites, or like they're faking it, or like they don't, you know, they like don't have the appropriate information. And that's really not true. You have the information, because if they're under 11, you're just giving them the biological and physiological and normalizing their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors for them.
Yeah. So you don't necessarily need to understand. It's more about dealing with, listen, I understand it feels good.
Right.
And as long, again, as long as you're establishing boundaries and everything. And then I think what I'm picking from you in this overall conversation we're having is that the big theme is to not worry too much about what's going on.
Yes. And if you're worried, don't express that to your kid yet.
Right. That's more your bullshit than it is on them, right?
Right. Yeah. So figure out if it is something to be worried about first.
Right.
And then bring it to your kid. And you know, maybe there is something that they're doing that is inappropriate or too ahead of themselves. And you figure that out through talking to your doctor, your therapist, right, whatever. Then you can talk to them about it. But
I think we could all, especially people who are the kind of people who would seek out a parenting podcast and want to listen to this kind of subject, is that chances are they're going to be safe erring on the side that this probably isn't a big deal. And I'm not going to over freak out about it. I'm going to continue to keep a watchful eye, though.
Exactly.
Until it seems to be something that's happening for a time frame that I'm no longer comfortable with. Then I could go speak to a professional. Or if I'm like, you know what? I just want to talk to a professional now so I could put this behind me and move on with my life. Also fine.
Absolutely. Okay. If it gives you that peace of mind, 100%. Another thing is too, especially for this lovely lady who asked the question in the chat room. If you want to find someone in your life or in your child's life to be that mentor, to be that same gendered role model, that would be another thing that you could do. So whether that's an uncle or a cousin or even like a family friend, you know, that kind of not takes the place of dad because you're doing both and you're wonderful at both, but that just can talk about the more specific, like, hey, do your balls go to the left? When you know what I mean? Like just things that women might not be able to even answer. That's something that would be good too. But if you do that, you just want to make sure that that person is on the same page as you and that they are going to hold the same boundaries that you're putting into place with your kids.
Sounds good. All right, let's take another break, maybe not break, and then we'll come back and talk teens.
Okay.
All right, we are right back immediately, and let's. This is the meat and potatoes. I may have done a poor job in hosting and organizing this because this might be a very deep, deep rabbit hole. But now we've got teens, and you'll hear this in the next episode that I actually have already recorded, weirdly, in the podcasting world of this. But Gary Hoffman, one of the guys at the radio station I work with, he's got teenagers. And one of the things he's wrestling with is that he's not okay with his kids having sex. And through no forcing, it kind of happened organically, but he got to know the parents of his son's girlfriend, and all parties are in agreement. And I listened to that, and I'm like, you know what? I think if I didn't have to arrange a sit down mafia style with the young lady's parents, I kind of feel like I would be okay with that. I'm not drawing such a hard line in the ground about no sex. So I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on that, Rachel Gibbs.
My question for that parent would be why.
Yeah. I think he would say that if to answer for him, I think he would say, like most people would think, is that a teenager is not ready to handle the responsibilities of a sexual relationship, be that the emotional effects. Then you also add to that the risks of having the wherewithal, the foresight to be aware of what pregnancy can do to your life and sexually transmitted diseases and the like. In my opinion, I don't think this is a, you know, sex is a naughty thing that, you know, I don't think it's that. I think it's that I think that there isn't a person listening to this that can't look at a teenager and go, yeah, you understand what's at stake when you decide to lay down with another person.
Right. So this could, I mean, we, Justin, we could honestly do a whole other episode
on this.
I'm so sorry. Don't be sorry. This is great stuff. I could talk about this all day. here's the thing. Teenagers are, A, every teenager is different. Okay, so just like kids, there are going to be some kids that are teens that are ready to have sex and that do understand the consequences and that do understand the impact. Not all of them are, but there are some that are. And if we look back, the whole reason for having these hormones and having these feelings was to keep the world populated, right? So yep. Back in the day, people got married at like 16, 17. They had to be having sex then because that was their duty.
Yep.
And so our bodies,
they also lived to be 36.
Right, right. So our bodies are still programmed. Evolution hasn't really changed anything yet in that way. When we hit, you know, 14, 15, 16, 17, somewhere in that range, these hormones are telling us to have sex, period. So I'm sorry, friend guy, but like sitting down and being like, oh, your parents decided that you're not ready to do this. It's kind of bullshit.
Well, here's the thing. There's also a dynamic that you'll hear in that conversation in the next episode that I may be misrepresenting them in that, which I think you would agree with, is that I think he's kind of saying, listen, I'm against it. I think you should be older, right? But I think he also talks about like a video game that he wasn't comfortable with his kid playing. And so what he kind of said with an untelling wink in his eye saying, not in my house. So he said, you could go to another friend's house and if they happen to have the game, that's okay. And that's how you can experience it. But I'm not, you know, kind of cool with it. And then he, in his mind, he's like, the kid's kind of figuring that out on his own. And my dad, even though he was very open, it's not like I said, hey, Dad, I'm going to have a girl over later on. And, you know, we're going to go to the bedroom and just bone it out. And he'd be like, oh, OK, I'll have your mom change the sheets. And you know what? I'll make that tri-tip that you like and we'll set up. We'll let you guys sit on the veranda. I'll set a nice mood for you. You know what I mean? Like, while I think it's great to be open and conversational, right. I don't know that anybody would be like, let's also make it easy.
No, depending on the age, that would
exactly.
be a little strange.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And there was also an element of, my dad also said, he goes, listen, I know you're going to have sex. I just don't want it to be in my house, you know, kind of a thing. Did I have sex in his house? Yes. But did I do it, just with devil may care attitude? Hell no.
Right.
There was always careful planning involved.
But here's the confusing thing is that you're 17, you're living in your parents' house, and your parent is saying to you, not in my house, not in my house.
Uh-huh.
And then a month goes by, you leave for college, only 30 days difference.
Yep.
And now what? You get to do whatever you want? And
yeah.
That's how people get pregnant. And that's how people get STDs is because they limit so much when they're at home. The kid gets out and it's like, fuck yeah, no more rules. I can have sex everywhere.
Gangbang!
And all that happened was 30 days went by.
Yeah. That's
so point, this so. Whole idea of, yeah, you can do it if I don't know about it. Really is the message, or, you know, you can play that game at your friends or not under my roof. If the kid's going to do it anyway, don't you want to help them be safe?
Yeah, but I don't I feel like it's also a weird boundary for them to say, hey, so-and-so's going to come over. And
no, that's different.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they can still, but there's a difference between, hey, I'm going to buy you some condoms. You know, you're 16, 17, you've been with your girlfriend for 3 years in high school. I know what's going to happen. I put condoms under the sink. Don't let me know what's going on.
Right.
That's a very big difference. But then let me have them over and cook you tri-tip and, you know what's going on.
So what you're saying is it's not an on or off, but there is a gray area where we can hit in the middle.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not to tell your kid, it's a very mixed message to have them grow up their whole life, know that they can come to you with anything. And then they come to you and say, hey, I want to have sex with my partner. And they're 16 and they've thought about it and they've been through sex ed and they want birth control and they want to prevent all of these horrible things that they've learned about. And the parent's like, you know what? I just know, not know, just not under my roof.
Yeah.
Like, well, what do you mean, Dad? We've been talking for all these years about this and I'm coming to you and being honest and smart about it and you're telling me to lie to you?
Yeah. That's a very solid point, because one of the things that I regret the most about my teenage sex time is that I would actually sneak into the motorhome that was parked in front of my grandmother's house. And it was because I had a girlfriend who I honestly did not want to do it. I mean, here's the thing. Let me be clear. Yes, I wanted to do it, but there's also a return on investment kind of aspect to my brain where it's like, yes, this girl I thought was very beautiful. I was way into her. Obviously, yes, yes, yes. But if it means I got to sneak into the RV in front of my very religious grandma's house, that kind of takes away from the sexual fun of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm more nervous than I am enjoying it, you know, in a lot of ways. And then there's just now I got to deal with the guilt of being disrespectful. So now I got to re-navigate my whole thinking on this after talking to you. And I'm going to do it right now with this sentence in that. So we got to have an open line of communication. We got to say, come to me if you have questions, if you have concerns, if you have fears, and I'm not going to be uptight about it. I'm going to talk about it. At the same time, I think it's okay for me to say, I'm not quite comfortable and I don't think it's right for you to have sex, obviously, when I'm sitting here in the house. But if you want to sit down and have a conversation about when and where is an appropriate time to do it, I'm open to that.
Can I ask you a devil's advocate question?
Yeah, hit me. Let's figure it out.
Why?
Why what?
Why have you ever had sex while your kids were in the house?
Absolutely, but it's my house. Well, and here's the thing.
And I'm not saying that I'm promoting.
I know, you said devil's advocate. You're saying like let's quid pro quo this. Let's punch holes in it and this honestly, in my brain, I'm kind of feeling like this seems to be the abortion argument where both sides have very valid points. You know what I mean? And it's hard to find a common ground that you could just walk away and go, yeah, I think this is the way we should handle it completely moving forward. And everybody's going to be happy with that.
But here's the thing is to a certain extent, we do know how these kids are going to act.
Yes.
We know for a fact that I believe the last time I looked up the statistic, it was somewhere around in the 70s, like 70-something% of kids have sex in high school.
I just saw that stat. And if you give me one sec, I don't know how
can you
updated it is, but I think it's even higher than what you just said.
Is it?
It's from Planned Parenthood, I think. It's either that I found or it's Focus on the Family, where they said 9 out of 10 17-year-olds are sexually active.
Okay. So yeah. So it's. So we look at that statistic.
Okay? I apologize. No, right here. By the time they're 19, 7 out of 10 teens have had sex. 2,000 teens get pregnant in the U.S. every day, and teens have very high rates of sexually transmitted infections.
Yep. And you know why?
Because nobody's talking about things to the kids, and then
they
have to sneak around.
Talk to their parents about it, and so they have unprotected sex.
Yeah.
So that's where it comes down to. If we're making these blanket statements saying no sex in high school, no sex in my house, all that's going to do is ensure that your kid becomes really good at lying to you.
Right. So maybe we treat it the same way as we would with the 8 or 9 year old, in that that's a thing that we wait for the situation to hit. We don't have to be proactive. We're proactive in the sense of informing, creating a strong bond that everybody feels comfortable and trustworthy to come and talk to. And unfortunately, we wait for the unlikely statistical event. Because here's the thing. You don't have to program into your... You helped me, Rachel. You did it. That's how you get a fucking license. You don't have to... Just like you said, a 9-year-old who has questions about sex doesn't then immediately want to go have sex. No 16, 17-year-old kid wants their parents to catch them having sex.
Exactly.
That never enters their brain. So it's a self-working out system where the statistical likelihood, everybody just play the odds. The likelihood, as horrible as it sounds for me to say this to you people, the likelihood of you catching your kid having sex is probably going to be slim to none. And that if you do, just like you would the questions that get hit, you decide in that moment how you want to handle it based on what your kid is doing. If your kid is being, in your opinion, kind of a royal F up, I think Rachel would back me up on this. You don't shame them for being caught having sex, but you use that as maybe a launching point to start a much bigger conversation. Like, listen, man, this is what you're doing. And it didn't feel good to them for you to walk in on them.
Exactly.
And you use that to say, you gotta refocus. I had multiple conversations with my father, not sexually, but obviously about other things, where he's like, you got to figure out what you want to do with your life, son. Okay. Is this what you want it to be? Maybe this is a sign that you need to work to get out on your own. So, because if you have your own house, then you can be having the sexy time with your lady friend whenever you want, and you don't have to worry about your mother or I walking in on you.
Exactly. And again, depending on the age, it depends. You know, if your kid is 15 and has been dating, quote unquote, I use air quotes, dating like a girl. Sorry, this thing popped up in the chat and I started reading it. I have to like turn it away when I start talking.
Trust me,
like,
I know.
Can't multitask.
I know.
If your kid's dating like the same boy or girl for like 4 years, right? And they're in their sophomore and junior year of high school. Might be a good time to ask your kid if he's thought about it.
Right.
Because think about when you were that age. You know, it's like I never understood, and I didn't get it when I was younger in that age, and I still don't understand it now. We all are that age at one time. So just because you're a parent does not mean that you never went through high school.
Yeah.
God, and that so you good. Didn't live through this also.
You are so fucking awesome, Rachel Gibbs. Let me just take a moment to let everybody drink that in. Because what that just made me realize is that the reason I never kind of had that issue too is on a different scale. Like, we can't look at this sex thing with blinders. That one of the things my dad really helped me was, he always had a push for me to make my own money, to grow a certain level of independence, which also gave me the ability to have my own car if I wanted to have sex in, or drive to a lake and set up a camping tent. That was another thing I did. I built a, like, he kind of unintentionally made me a romantic, where I would set up a tent and I would write things in the sand for the ladies and build a campfire, and we would sit and we would get a pizza and eat by the fire, and then one thing would lead to another, and then we would be cuddling in a sleeping bag, you know, inside the tent, and boom, 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 yakety shackety. I don't know what that means.
Yakety shackety.
You know, I sometimes do pillow talk, Rachel, too.
Listen,
I'm a very...
Want to go yakety shackety?
I'm a man of passion, she'll tell you. And but I also could afford a hotel room, or, you know what I mean? Those kinds of things. I could pull that off even at a younger age, which, while it can be disconcerting to the idea of your kid going out and having sex, especially in an area that is not in your home, and there's lots of things that could go wrong. But if you really take a step back to kind of almost take this thing almost full circle, in that developmentally, my father's looking at a borderline full-time employed 16-year-old who was head over heels in love with the girl that he first had sex with, came to him, told him about how great it was and how it was this cool thing, and shared it with him on almost a peer level.
Yeah.
And then I continued to do that, but I wasn't coming to him with every girl. In fact, at one point, my mom even said, you know, you don't have to drag home every bone you play with, just so you know. Like, if you're just banging her, I don't need to meet her. Like, it's what my mom would say.
Oh, which, my goodness. Your parents, Justin.
Which I loved. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I love the honesty. Admittedly, as a 17-year-old, 16-year-old, I was embarrassed by it. But I was like, oh, okay. And I learned from it. That's a solid point. You know what I mean? But what she didn't understand is that I genuinely thought each of these women were going to be my wife. That's how goofy I was at that time. Yeah, well, that's true. Well, I found a wife, so see, I was right eventually.
Good job.
All right.
Good job, so little buddy.
I'm taking us down a rabbit hole again. So now we figured out, I feel, we kind of have a game plan and have talked about the idea of, okay, teenager's going to have sex. We want to have an open line of communication. Let's get into what if my kid comes to me with something that is a little maybe fetish oriented? Or more sexually experimental than I
have to tell you, in my 10 years of working towards the license and in my, how many years? 5 years of being in practice now? Yeah. Oh my God.
Look at you, girl.
Yeah. 5 years of being in practice. I have never heard that.
You've never heard like a teenager be way into.
They might be into something, but they're not so far into it that A, they're talking to their parents ever about that. They're still figuring out what it is. Like, they're not, because they're not even over 18 yet. So, like, they can't go to the stores to, like, get the things.
Well, then let's maybe there's a different angle that we could hit this that could also help in that. What are the issues or worries with a fetish? I mean, should we be, is that more of an American, you know,
I just wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
You have enough to worry about.
I feel like, here's the thing. I feel like because Americans were kind of started by Puritans, you know what I mean? That we kind of have, or maybe it's the vibe that we have, that we're a little bit more uptight.
Except for Alexander Hamilton. Have you listened to that musical?
No, I have not. Oh, that's right.
Well, first of all, you're missing out on life.
Your mom is going very soon, right?
How did you know that?
You told me. Oh. I don't know if you told me on the show, though. I may have let some kind of cat out of the bag. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. My mom and my brother are actually seeing Lin-Manuel Miranda's and Leslie Odom Jr.'s last performance of Hamilton in New York.
Sexy. So anyway, you were saying he was...
So anyway, he was not very pure, but total side note, everyone listened to that show because you're welcome.
Yeah. But I'm saying, I guess... It's a Puritan value, and we like to think that people in Europe are not uptight about that stuff, and they're more loosey-goosey. And I know that we have people that listen from all over the world. Australia is just everybody's fucking everything, I imagine. No, I'm kidding.
Sweden's awesome. Sweden has the best sex ed program.
Really? When do they start?
5.
Wow. Good for them.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Oh, that's good. I would like to, oh my God, that makes me want to have sex with a Swedish chick because I just want to see if they're like, how uptight is she? Or is it?
See, and they won't be. That's the thing is no matter when you start sex ed, it doesn't make someone more open or
less
uptight.
They are who they are. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. But my joke was going to be is that I want to see how uptight she is, or is it going to be, she's going to be so mechanical and that she's going to be telling me exactly what to do, which with a huge scoop of irony would be unbelievably fucking awesome as well. So we don't need to worry about a fetish. If that's what they're into, that's going to be what they're into. And there's more than likely nothing we could or couldn't have done differently. It's not like one time something happened and then that catapults a fetish.
Right.
It's usually a multiple experience and it's an interest or a passion. And if they are into something like that, as long as it's not, you know, I think we all could agree, little children, I think that it's like, go do your thing and go find somebody else who doesn't mind that you like to lick their toes. Go have fun. Go enjoy yourself. And that's, you know, somebody else in the chat room commented on how they thought my mom was awesome for their, you know, kind of what seems like a cavalier approach to sex in regards to me and my siblings. I mean, they were very cool. My mom caught my brother having sex with a girl in the parking lot at the school of a prom because she was chaperoning in the back of a pickup. And now we laugh about that story today. But at the time, she's like, Rich, damn it, you son of a bitch. And she's like hitting him. And he's like trying to pull his pants up and stuff like that.
Oh, my God. That's horror. I can't even imagine.
Oh, yeah. It's wildly embarrassing. But now it's funny. And so the thing I think that we can kind of take from that, not that by any means, I love my parents and I think they're great, but I don't think anybody should use them as a guide. But I think the one thing that I think we could all, and I'm asking you for your approval on this, that we could agree is that they were very comfortable in their own sexual skin.
Yes.
And my parents, by the way, just to maybe this will help squelch a lot of fears for those of you listening, my parents, 10,000 times freakier than I ever would be. Oh, my gosh. Like, the things that they are into and I have talked to them about as an adult, more so than as a kid. So, no, even if you're super not into things or anything, I think you could use at least me as an example, that my parents super open about what they were into. And my dad one time had my mom stop shaving everywhere, which I think we also talked about on an episode of this show.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I talked with them like they were also on the show on a different episode, but he was because he was into that and I noticed it, but I didn't sexualize it. I just thought it was because she was European and I was also very young. But the point I'm kind of drawing from that is, and I think it's the thing that you keep saying, is that you could be super uptight about it. And that doesn't necessarily mean your kid's going to be wild and crazy. Although I think statistically it does increase the likelihood if you are more reserved with information, then they're going to start walking down a path that they shouldn't be because they're navigating it on their own instead of with parental guidance.
Exactly.
Or you could be super liberal with it like my parents were. And I'm a pretty conservative guy sexually. I'm not really into that wild and crazy stuff. That's by at least my definition. But also, I don't necessarily look at my sex life and think of it as lesser than. I have moments, I'll be honest, I have moments where I'm kind of like, I hope my wife is getting everything out of this that I am. But I think that's also going to be, for the most part, everybody. Yes, yeah, yes?
Absolutely.
We're all going to have that hope. We're all going to have that ambition. I think that there isn't a person listening to this show that is that as weird as it may sound for you to hear to talk about your kids and think of them in this way, I think ultimately we want our kids to leave fulfilled and satisfied lives. That's,
yes.
I really want to push that more than having them worry about being happy all the time, because a lot of times you could come out of some really fucked up, miserable times in your life, and then it's the struggle getting out of that that really makes you feel complete and whole as a person. Mm-hmm. And that part of that means that you should be comfortable banging around whatever orifice you want to do with this person that you love. And that maybe also you get to have an interesting life where you bang a total stranger for one time, as long as you're doing it with educational, like educated awareness.
Exactly.
And you can walk away and nobody gets hurt. Then great. And everybody wins. Yeah.
Absolutely. And one other thing that just came up in the chat that I just wanted to say to kind of put the nail in the coffin here is listen to what they have to say to your kids. You know, whether they're 5 or whether they're 17, they have a belief and they have information. That's why they're asking you.
Yeah.
So ask them what they know. I remember coming to my mom asking her what 69 was. And I was in middle school. I think I was like 11 or 12.
Yeah.
And I came home and I was like, Mom, what's 69? And the first thing that she said to me was, well, what do you think it is? And so I got to share with her what I had heard from my friends, which was really wrong. And you know, she had a chuckle and said, I'm so glad you came to me because that's definitely not what it is. And she told me what it was.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'd gone through sex ed, so I knew. And at the time I was like, like, I think I made like the throw up noise, you know, it just sounded like the grossest thing in the entire world. And you know, that's not something that I was interested in for a few years. Like, I got my answer and I was like, okay, that's disgusting. Thanks, Mom.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Which is great, because now if you would have had a dude come to you when you're 15 and go, hey, listen, I want to try this 69 thing. You're like, eh, not my cup of tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I ask you a question, more less so as a licensed therapist, but more so as a lady who is also a young lady at some time?
Yeah.
How, if I have a daughter, I often think of this for my poor gentlemen who have daughters, because it's a thing that's such a huge part of our culture, and in that you always, everybody sexualizes girls when you're a dad.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's such an unfair thing. Like, Tommy Jonigan has a great bit, and I don't know if he's put it on an album, but I worked with him one time. And it was one of those moments where a comedian tells a joke that not only makes you laugh really hard, but kind of goes, holy fuck, yeah, that's some crazy shit. Where his girlfriend was pregnant, and he found out he was having a daughter, and his buddy's like, what are you going to do when she starts dating, man? And he goes,
How about we let her get born? How about you let me hold my baby daughter before we sexualize her? Can you at least let me have that?
Right.
But I think there isn't a father out there listening that I would imagine that their biggest concern is that obviously nobody wants to think about their daughter having sex or anything like that. But I think their biggest fear would be having their daughter preyed upon without knowing it. And I don't mean in an actual predatory way, but it's just that teenage boys are hungry. You know what I mean? And I think there's a part of this element that girls are curious and hungry too. But do you think I'm being a sexist in thinking that I think that there's a bigger part of girls that also want to please those kind of boys? And I think that a father would like to communicate to his daughter, you don't have to do something that you don't want to do. Nobody is worth that.
Absolutely. The biggest hindrance to that is that dads are so afraid, in my experience, dads are so afraid of bringing it up because it feels awkward or uncomfortable because it's their daughter. They don't want to, quote unquote, like put the idea in their brain. But it's part of life. And like we talked about at the beginning, we want our kids to be healthy sexual adults. We want that for them. And so if that means that as a dad, you need to sit down with your daughter and have a few conversations, you know, when I was a teenage boy, this is what things were like. And so I just want to tell you, because I want you to make these decisions for yourself. And I want you to be a sexually empowered woman when you are a woman. And right now, these guys' sex drives or these guys' hormones or however you want to phrase it for your daughter, they're going to be different than yours, or maybe they're the same. But you don't have to do anything that you don't want to do.
Tell me if this sounds too 1950s-ish or whatever, but hearing you say that, I try as much as I can to put myself in other people's shoes. And I think if I was a dad who had a daughter, and learning what I've learned from you today in this idea of honesty, is that I think the best way to communicate and to deal with that concern would just be to sit down with your daughter and say something to the effect of, I love you more than anything in this world. Mm-hmm. And I know that boys are going to be interested in you. And I would be lying if I didn't say that didn't concern me. But I know that it's a natural part of life. But my big thing is that I want you to know that you don't have to do anything that you don't want to do.
Yes.
And that is my fear as your father, is that some boy is going to try to get you to do something that you're not comfortable with. And that by being vulnerable about that fear, is that unintentionally dumping bullshit on my kid? Or is that kind of is that a level of honesty that then now the kid goes, Oh, wow, okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Because now I feel like if she's in that moment now and she doesn't feel comfortable, now she knows that it's not because of something that is wrong with her. She goes, no, my dad's got my back on this, and I'm out of this. I'm out. Or I can now go to my dad and say that this happened, and dad could come in and whoop the shit out of this kid.
Right. And again, it really all comes back to what you think your kid is ready to hear. Mm. You know, and you know your kid better than anybody else.
Yeah, so maybe not a conversation to have with your kid at 8, but right. If you have a 15-year-old daughter, 16, you know, 14, whatever.
Like if your daughter's in high school, you know, that would have been that. I mean, my dad and I had some similar conversations.
Okay. And how did you take them as a kid?
I took it as my dad really cared a lot about me, and that my dad wanted to make sure that I made choices for me and not to please somebody else.
Yeah.
That's what I took away from it. And he shared with me, you know, there was one day, there were a bunch of guy friends that were over, and my friends were always older than I was, mm-hmm. especially when I was younger. Even now, most of our friends are older than Kyle and I are. But anyway, they were all standing in the living room by our piano, and my dad came home early from work, and he will still to this day tell you that that was like the most terrifying afternoon of his whole life, because he walked into our living room and there were just like 5 older looking, like shaved head, like greaser guys
yeah.
that were like in choir with me.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, he will still tell you that that was the most terrifying day.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a conversation shortly after that, and it was great. I felt very loved. I felt loved, and it wasn't a conversation that made me feel bad. It was one that encouraged me to make my own decisions, and that felt very good.
Good. That makes I don't even have a daughter, and that makes me feel good.
Good. Well, you can have the same conversation with boys. I mean, as Jessica's saying here in the chat, and I agree, girls can be totally aggressive too.
Yeah. And it's my own bullshit. I mean, I had that girlfriend that I told you that had me going into my grandparents' motorhome. You know what I mean? Like, she was way into some stuff that I was not necessarily ready for, which, again, that's not a judgment to her.
Right.
But I was also at a point where, here's the thing, I'm coming at it from a different wiring, and I don't know psychologically or anything, but I just think that it's easier for a guy, if you have a girl, predatory from a girl standpoint just sounds like uber interested when the guy's not on board. And yeah. And this is probably wildly sexist and ignorant of me, but I just don't think it could do the same kind of long-term damage that I think it might be able to do to a girl. Am I being wildly sexist?
I wouldn't call it sexist, but I think that the damage can be equal on both sides.
Okay, fair to say. I think, unless I'm cutting you short, I know we did a super long episode on this, but I think it was great. I think it was super informative. Yeah. I'm uber appreciative of you and your time, but I feel like I've got all the questions I've got answered. Is there anything else?
And if anybody listens to this and then has more questions just based on what we talked about, we can always do a follow-up to this and just answer people's questions if that's something that you get a lot of after.
Okay, yeah. And you could find and hit up Rachel at rachelgibbstherapy.com. There's an email for her there, but it's rachel@rachelgibbstherapy.com. Mm-hmm. You can hit her up on the Twitter at Right Wellness. That's Right with a W_wellness. But all of that is in the description of this episode. And stay tuned for some very exciting things coming there. And speaking of how you can help the fantastic it's Kyle, right? Why did I blank on his name all of a sudden?
Weird.
Okay, good. I almost pissed myself because I'm like, I want to call him Kyle, and I'm deathly afraid that is wrong, and I like him. So why is it the thing that if you have a lapse on somebody's name that you've shunned them personally and now hate their guts? I don't know what was wrong with me there. But anyway, Kyle and Rachel, not only getting married, not only is she a licensed therapist, but they are working on a fantastic project, if you ask this humble internet broadcaster, in that they are going to create a resource that people can come and get educated about wellness. Yes, yes? Am I doing a fair job of describing this?
So basically our goal is to bridge the gap between meeting with a therapist or a coach and self-help books. So there's a huge gap between reading a self-help book and then coming in for like weekly therapy. And we're trying to fill that gap. And so we're going to be creating a bunch of free resources and some premium ones like online courses that will be purchased on topics like this. So it'll be, that we're working on. Our first one is going to be something called Revive Your Relationship. And it's going to be like a 6-module in-person and online option. And it'll be these much more affordable than coming in for couples therapy, therapeutically educational courses and seminars, on top of which we'll have tons of free stuff. Like you said at the beginning, we're going to be doing a podcast, tons of blogs, lots of fun webinars. It's going to be unbelievable.
There is a link in the on the Facebook page already at facebook.com/dadpodcast. And then I will put the same link in this episode. I'm not seeing it customized, but if you go to kiva.org, you can actually contribute money and help them raise money to get this thing off the ground.
Yeah, and it's a loan too. So if you can contribute, you can contribute as little as $25. And when we launch, we start paying it back and you'll get all your money back. And so it's basically enabling us to launch the company. And as soon as we have a return on it, we can pay you back. And so it's kind of a win-win situation. And it's an unbelievable, we really want to make a huge difference with this. So if you can look, share, and help, even anything as little as $25 can help us reach our goal.
So if they go to kiva.org and do a search for Right Wellness Center, or is there a customized link? Is it like
there is a customized link? I think I sent it to you over Skype, but I can, I'll post it. We can post it in the episode description.
Okay, cool. I'll do that too. Because when I click it, it's only taking me to the link anyway. Sorry, blah, blah, blah. All right, so it'll be in the description of this, Kiva.org, Wright Wellness Center. Wright, of course, spelled with a W, because that's going to be Rachel's fantastic new... Are you taking his name? Is that your
I plan? Am taking his name.
All right, look at you, old school people!
Oh, no, traditions!
Rachel, on behalf of everyone who listens to the show and has ever heard anything you've done in this show, let me not only congratulate you on your fantastic accomplishment of achieving your goal of becoming a licensed therapist, but let me sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for all of the help and information that you have offered to not only me, but the listeners of this fair show. Your generosity and kindness is unbelievable. And the information that you bring is very, very helpful. And again, there are a lot of people that listen to this show that now see Rachel for therapy. And I cannot recommend her enough. She is obviously, you've heard her on the show. She is good peeps. Congratulations again.
Thank you, honey. That really means a lot.
It means the world to me that you are what you do here. So on behalf, all of the descriptions for all the stuff that we talked about, again, all the links and everything are in the description of this episode. If you have a question like, hey, fuckball, I can't find the link, just email me, tweet me. I will get it to you. Go to facebook.com/dadpodcast. It will be there. I will plaster it. Go to Rachel Gibbs Therapy. You can contact her there. Get therapy via Skype, yada, yada, yada. On behalf of the lovely licensed therapist, Rachel Gibbs. This is Justin Warsham saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.